I think you should buy them, Joe.
Buy the Titans?
Yeah.
I'll ask you, I've got enough in a checking account.
We are going to get started. It is now high noon, and we like to start on time, and we like to finish on time. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Tom Parrish with the Scarlet Leadership Institute, and welcome to our Luncheon Leadership Monthly conference call. If you'd like a copy of today's slides, send me an email at tom@scarletleadership.com, and this call will be posted on the archives under teleconferences on our website tomorrow, so you can share that link with anybody that wasn't able to join in today. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Joe Scarlet.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Glad you're joining us for our continuing series, CEO series. Before we get started, a couple of notes. First of all, a little advertisement. The Emerging Leaders class, which is 8 class days spread over 8 months, begins April 25th. You probably already received an email on it. It's a great program. It's all about basic leadership skills, about team building and change management and dealing with difficult situations. Just a great class, 8 class days, 1 day a month for 8 months. Sign up for it now. It's going to start April 25th. Second note is our next conference call is April 9th. It's a Thursday again. And our guest will be Mark Cleveland, who's a serial entrepreneur. He's probably best known for Hobby Express and then for SwiftTech. He's won lots of awards, and this is going to be a conference call focused on smaller companies and entrepreneurs. So it'll be a little bit different tilt than we've had in the past, but Mark's a great guy. I worked with him on stage about 3 or 4 months ago on a program, and he'll put on a great program for us. So we're looking forward to that. Mark your calendars, Thursday, April 9th. Today our guest speaker is my friend Bobby Frist, who is the co-founder and CEO of HealthStream, which is a very interesting company and a leader in the healthcare field. But with that, I'll turn this over to Mary Fink, our hostess, to kick things off. Mary?
Thanks, Joe, and thank you, Bobby, for being our guest. We're very excited to have you here. There's a lot of interest in what you do, and so I think I will take off a little from the noted agenda and just ask you to tell us a little bit about what HealthStream does.
Well, sure, Mary, and thanks, Joe. It's a great opportunity today to visit with you and hear questions from folks that are participating in your excellent leadership programs. If I think back a little bit about the foundation of HealthStream from when we founded it to today, the one thing that is consistent over the whole 25-year span is our passion and interest in developing people, and in particular the use of technologies to develop people. And then more specifically, throughout that journey, we've learned the specific skills required to help develop and train and assess America's healthcare workforce. So we deliver education, training, and development programs to about 4.3 million subscribers through our internet platforms. And those platforms are used to deliver basic skills and knowledge. They're also used to test and evaluate people. We're in the pre-employment business now. We're trying to help select the very best type of workforce employees in healthcare. And then we also address specific types of problems around compliance and the types of issues where the workforce's knowledge and skill are really the determining factor in the quality of outcome for a patient. And so some areas, for example, that would be business-oriented would be getting America's healthcare workforce ready for the changing payment model system. Over 1.9 million workers have signed up for our programming on ICD-10. Or on the clinical side, resuscitation rates are not what they should be, and that's based on a lack of skill. And we've teamed up with American Heart Association and a company called Laerdal to provide cutting-edge approaches to training and developing and assessing the skills of the workforce on CPR and resuscitation. And so over a million people, healthcare workers, have taken educational programming on resuscitation skills. So it's been a long journey, 25 years, but some of the founding principles of developing people are still a core part of our business. And today we feel we're having this great, great impact on clinical and outcomes in healthcare by developing the healthcare workforce.
So I know that you, having heard you speak before, that you have been an entrepreneur since you were a young child. And I know this was an entrepreneurial endeavor for you. So exactly how did you get started?
Well, where do we want to start? So if I think about my first real effort to create a business, it was probably late high school and early college where I started a mobile detailing service. And there were so many lessons learned in those 4 summers where I chose to polish, wax, wash cars all across Middle Tennessee. And so many lessons learned at that stage in life about work. I also learned a lot of things I didn't want to do when I grew up. That was very physical and very hard. It wasn't a thinking game as much as it was a physical one. And I learned things I didn't want to do. I also learned that I wanted to have recurring revenue businesses, not have to sell each and every customer each and every time. So interestingly, some of my early efforts at generating income for myself in summers way back in college set the stage for principles that still apply today. In fact, in our HealthStream Constitution, some of those very principles can be seen as really the opposites of lessons learned and acquired in the early days when I was doing projects and businesses like Vintage Auto Detailing, one of my first businesses. So generate recurring revenues is one of our core business principles at HealthStream. It applies to all of our products and solutions. And we like multiple year subscriptions to our products. And that's really a derivative or maybe it's the opposite of the way some of my early businesses started.
Right. And I know that being an entrepreneur is an exciting thing, but it's also got its challenges because, as you said, you learn about – you have to do everything. So you learn those things that you like to do, and you learn about those things that not so much, and that those are great lessons learned. So tell us a little bit of your leadership experience and history.
Well, leadership's an evolving skill for anyone, and I can think back to some of the early maybe terrifying realizations of that when I was realizing that the things you had to be able to do to be a good leader. And if I think back way back, I remember one of my first speaking engagements where I was asked to speak in the capacity as a founder of the company, and I was going to go over to Vanderbilt University and speak at a marketing conference. Roland Rust had invited me to speak because I was an emerging entrepreneur. This is about 23 years ago. I was right out of college. And I realized then that, you know, public speaking was going to be an important part of being a leader. And I really didn't enjoy that. And so the whole process of coming to having to force myself to develop that skill over the years has been a critical part of my development. And it was really a terrifying event where I faced myself and said, you know, if you're going to be a CEO and a leader, you have to learn this skill. And I remember that event was, in particular, was really kind of a disaster. I wrote a script and I read from the script. I had a hard time engaging the group. They were all professors and really smart people. But I kind of faced my demons then and realized that the journey was going to be long, and sometimes you have to force yourself to do things that you then ultimately have to learn to do over time. And I remember specifically that time as being one of those leadership inflection points. But over time, learning to lead and engage employees is probably one of the key skills that has to evolve. And, you know, as the company has grown, and it's still a fairly small company, but we've grown to about 850 employees, the role of the leader and the CEO definitely changes about every 5 years for me as our company has grown. And today I think of one of the most important roles that I have is figuring out engagement strategies for our employees to keep them pulling in the same direction, carrying forward a corporate vision, and finding ways that they can contribute personally to our direction. And that's led to programs like our employee-led teams, which you know, you have to create programs to create engagement. And so another core leadership element has been learning the shifting responsibility in a growing company sometimes goes from the very tactical in the early days of closing a sale to the very strategic, which is how do you engage 850 people pulling in the same direction behind a single vision.
Well, and now that you have offices in different locations, so it's not like walking down the hallway and knowing everyone that you meet and knowing their names. It is different with a larger workforce, and it's harder to be engaged with them personally as it was probably in the old days, but it's also even more of a challenge because the larger you get, the more important that becomes. Joe, did you have a comment?
Yes, I was listening to Bobby. I was listening to you talk about your experience of speaking in public, and I could tell the same story, just different locations. And it's a terrifying experience to get up there and start talking in front of a group, and it's, but it's like any other skill in life. You, the more you do of it, the better you get at it. And as you did, and I did the same thing, I forced myself into situations where I had to speak in front of a group. And you just get, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And it's like any other skill in any other business skill. The more you do of it, the better you get at it. The more you learn from it. So you and I had identical experiences, and I would encourage anybody who's headed down the role of becoming a leader, learn how to speak in public. It's an essential skill if you're going to make it to a high level.
And it had to be a forced skill. I really, you realize you just have to do it. You know, the next thing to be afraid of for me is a television. And Molly's had me in a couple of small local production pieces, and I just can't get comfortable behind a camera being interviewed yet. And, but I also realize that, that if the company keeps growing, it's, it might be something that I have to do. And fortunately, I've got great coaches around me to help me learn those things. But, you know, it can be a challenging journey, and a lot of things can be uncomfortable. You have to push through them.
Exactly. Well, so we've heard about some of the challenges that you face. What's the thing you like most about being a leader?
You know, let's see. I think one of the most exciting things is when I hear a story of success of one of our employees, and it could be something very simple, like a win, a new account, or a great outcome, like a hospital that maybe used our services and got a great outcome from it. And it creates a sense of sense of pride that we're contributing as a group and we're making a difference. It's a lot of fun when I hear about employees doing well, both in the company or alumni that have left that are doing well outside of the company. It's a lot of fun to reflect on their accomplishments. And so some of the greatest moments to celebrate are when you see success in other people and you feel like, you know, you've been a part of that journey. And HealthStream has provided that platform for many people with 850 employees a day and over 25 years. A lot of people have come and gone. And it's really, really exciting when I hear stories of their continued success. And that's true on a daily basis inside the company. And when I bump into someone that used to work with us that is also enjoying success in their career, that's really exciting for me.
Well, and that's a really important point because so many people sort of resent training people and getting them developed and getting them to a point, and then they leave the company and they do well. It's sort of a point of contention. I think it is so important for leaders to understand the importance of developing people for whatever their next role is, whether it's inside the company or outside the company. You don't want them to leave, but if they have an opportunity, they are always going to make you proud, you know, if they started with you.
We actually here, we kind of joke about those that have come and gone and come again. And so we have some people that have come and gone up to three times now, where they went off and developed their career someone else or went in and got an advanced degree maybe and did another job for a few years and then decided to come back. And so I could probably name at least a dozen people that have come here and worked for a few years, gone somewhere else and come back, and then maybe an equal number of people that have done that at least twice. Now, not everybody gets to come back. It depends on their contributions and success. But if you leave on really good terms, we welcome people back after they've gained other skills and want to be part of our culture again.
I think that's a sign of a great organization, that people go and want to come back. They find out either, as you said, they've developed their skills, or the grass wasn't quite as green out there as they thought it was, and maybe this was a better place than I first thought, so I have a greater appreciation for it. And they're probably some of the people that are your best employees when they come back. What have been, we talked about your challenges and sort of your challenge of being a learning presentation skills and all that, but I want to ask you, what challenges have you specifically faced as your company, as a leader, as your company has grown from a small entrepreneurial endeavor to the company that you are today in many locations? How does that challenge your leadership skills aside from keeping people engaged and making sure that they're all doing what they're supposed to do, how has your role changed?
Yeah, I can definitely think back to some inflection points in the company that where there were really challenging times or difficult hurdles. And so one in particular that I remember well is there was around 2003, and there were new regulations coming in healthcare. They were called HIPAA regulations, which are privacy and how personal data is managed. And essentially, everyone in the industry had to be educated on these new regulations, the HIPAA regulations. And we were well positioned as a company to provide that training service. At the time, it was probably less than a million people, maybe half a million people. And we had projected a doubling of capacity needed for our systems. Well, we missed that by about threefold, and we went through period of 6 to 8 weeks of trying to figure out a way to get our infrastructure to support the demand on our services. And it resulted in a really unique set of leadership challenges where not all the solutions were just more servers and more programmers, and they had to do all that stay up overnight a lot to get ready and try to solve the problem, but also facing the customers that were having a bad experience on the platform because of the capacity constraints, negotiating with other customers maybe different usage patterns of our service. You know, we had to come up with creative strategies to lighten the load on our servers. So we actually went to some major customers and asked them to use it on Monday and Wednesday and Friday, and others on Tuesday and Thursday, to shift the balancing of the use of service. And I just remember it was a very challenging time because in the first week or so, as the utilization spiked, there was nothing but disappointment from customers, and they were calling us saying they couldn't get access to our programming and our offerings. And so it was an interesting time where you could kind of cave, or you could say, you know, you could put all your pressure on the programmers and developers to try to fix it. But as we got into the problem, we realized there were business solutions like negotiating with customers their usage patterns that could also be part of the solution. And I remember that as a challenging time that where everybody got creative to address the challenge.
Wow. And it's, when you survive those challenges, then everybody feels even better having gone through it together. You get the T-shirt, we survived whatever. And it's also a great lesson in more is not always better. Sometimes more slowly is better than so quickly.
Yeah, or a little bit of innovation applied to the problem, maybe you can address it in a different way. And the pressure of the problem, either creativity emerges or people panic. And I'd say at that time, our teams came together and we solved the problem and kept the customers, kept growing. But there's been more than one inflection point in 25 years where a series of cascading events could have put the company out of business, or you can find a way through it and figure out the next level of growth. And that certainly was one of them. That was probably a more minor one compared to some of the others we've been through.
Right. How do you handle the need for creative solutions? Do you have a think tank that you get together, or do you have a group of people that you call together, or you ask for solutions from anybody? What's out there from anybody's ideas that they have? How do you get at that?
Well, today, interesting enough, is actually our innovation day. It's called InGames, and we run a program at our company where we give 3 days off a quarter to about 120 of our development and creative staff, and they get to pick up and work on problems that aren't directly related to their current line of work or current business and job demands. And so today will be the presentation from probably about 25 teams that have kind of spontaneously formed to address a set of issues that have been published over the year up into a challenge board. And they get 3 days off in the quarter to not work on their primary job, to work on picking a problem they want to address. Today will be the presentations from those groups to show off their prototype ideas on how to solve or address those issues. And it's been a great program because it encourages a cross-departmental collaboration. You may find, instead of working within your programming or development group, you may find yourself working with someone from accounting or other areas of the company that also wanted to address or had ideas to address that challenge. So we have formal programs to encourage innovation. And then I think we also do a really good job of hiring people that have a passion for this field that are just innovative by nature. And so I would say the pre-employment screening for people that are really driven by passion and vision to make a difference in healthcare, and they want to bring their best game to our business. If you can catch that on the front end when you're hiring, it makes a big difference in your culture. And so we, as a result, we have a very, very creative group of 850 employees.
Wow, that's really exciting. I know you're excited to hear the reports. And will you implement everything or anything that makes sense feasibly, or how do you decide what we're going to go after right now as opposed to what we might implement later?
Right. So right now it focuses on the creative front end and defining the problem set. Today there'll be a judging panel. It'll be about 2.5 hours of judging the presentations. There'll be some winners selected. They'll be recognized for their work against the problem and their innovative approach through the award ceremony at the end. And a few of those ideas will then be picked up and put into development pipelines and made a formal part of the way we develop our business. So many ideas are coming out of this program. We're in our fourth quarter now of running it, I think, maybe the third full quarter. And now the challenge is to figure out exactly what you've asked, is how to get some of those, more of those ideas to see the light of day. And we have a team of people working on that as well. Do you just take the winners, or do you take the one where there's the most passion around them? And so we've got some work to do on that. But we've seen several that were easy kind of process that did get implemented. So we've seen an impact from the program already.
That is awesome. I think that is a great idea. I'll be interested in learning more about that. What's the toughest decision you've ever had to make?
Well, I don't know if there's a single decision. Every day something seems to crop up that creates a need to think about it and process it and maybe struggle with the decision. There's something. The types of decisions that can be challenging, we have an active M&A pipeline, and we have to make trade-offs with our capital allocation and what's the best use of capital. And so, companies can be very interesting. You can think they'd be a great part of your company, but they come with a lot of risk, from public scrutiny and being a public company. And so those are kind of high-pressure decisions that create a lot of challenge in getting them right. And, collaboration is a good way to talk those through and then incubate the idea for a few days before you make final decisions. But, that's an example of a category where the decisions are very important because they can have a big impact once decided, and they can change your culture, or they could be not successful. And so the more impact of the outcome of the decision can make, the more you have to noodle it and think about it and challenge. And sometimes I'm a bit antagonistic in how I bring out the best thinking. I may have a point of view, and I like people to bring up their point of view, and then we kind of debate those point of views to see, whose ideas survive the best. And so there's a lot of that going on now that affects the technologies we decide to use, how we develop things, what markets we enter. And it's a healthy process, but a lot of weighty decisions come out of that.
Do you have a group of people that you call in for those discussions, or do you pick and choose depending on the topic of the decision? Is your leadership, your senior leadership group, sort of your think group, or does that change?
Well, the board, at every level, people participate in various types of decisions, and there are certainly decisions that are the domain of the board and the senior team. We have a broader leadership team of about 30 that have formed committees and areas of responsibility, like we have a document we call a constitution, which has a lot of our practices and values in it, and there's a kind of a governance committee over that at the leadership team level. And so mergers and acquisition decisions are generally the domain of the board and the senior team. But we also created a culture. We have about 9 employee-driven teams that contribute to defining who we are and how we operate. These teams range, from wellness to environmental impact, community outreach. And those teams have their own chairpersons, which are by almost by definition non-executive, non-leadership team members. They're self-nominated, and they assume the role of chairperson. And we have 9 of those teams that are employee-driven teams with employee chairpersons. They generally get budgets to their business plans for how to move the ball forward in those areas of the company. So a lot of these decisions are distributed. But they're also based on the nature of the decision. They may be focused in a certain group of employees.
Okay. Okay, great. We talk a lot about leadership lessons, and I know Joe has a lot of things that he likes to talk about on a regular basis that are just the foundational things. What are some of those lessons that you've learned, and who have been your mentors along the way to help teach you those lessons?
Well, oh my gosh, you know, so I have the great fortune of being surrounded by, first of all, just great employees that are constantly teaching each other and teaching me. And along my professional career, I have the great fortune of both incredible family support, and they have had their own qualifications to be leaders and to teach me. And then because of them, a great network of people that have helped me at every stage formulate, shape, and direct this business. Some of my business relationships go back from founding to today. So the council that incorporated our company on September 27, 1990, was Paige Davidson, a younger attorney at Bassberry & Sims at the time. And today he is still our outside general, his outside counsel at Bassberry & Sims. 26 years later. So, you know, mentors like that that you develop early and stay with you for that journey are critical to your success. And again, I had great advantages in forming that network because of my extensive family in the city and their successes and their network. And so just if you don't have that access to that network, the best thing to do is to pick up the phone and start building a network. And it's just a common piece of advice, but the power of networking can't be underestimated, and everyone should strive to build a personal network. You know, good Tom Dent, one of our earliest board members, our co-founder, Jeff McLaren, who's still on our board of directors, although he's now the CEO of another company. Just again, great fortune to be surrounded by people that have been on a long journey with me. And sometimes, clearly, if you think of Tom Dent has been on the board, you know, over 15, maybe 18 years. We didn't have compensation for directors when we were a private company, and they were joining our board because I got to know them and asked them, and at the time he was the president of another large public company, and by asking them to be engaged, they were volunteering their time, not for capital or money, but they were interested in what we were doing and wanted to be a part of that. And so just great fortune to have many of those people that go back two decades that have helped shape, you know, both who I am and the company that we are today.
Wow. Joe, do you have any comments about networking?
I sure do. I would completely concur with you. The importance, people often underestimate the importance of networking, and it can affect you in so many ways and impact you in a very, very positive way. When I look at my last 15 or 20 years in business, I learned more through networking than through any other single thing I did. And you develop great relationships, you build friendships, and you also, you know, if things aren't going well, you need a little advice, you've always got somebody to call. So I would encourage anybody growing in the business world that you intend on becoming a leader, develop your network. It's a no-lose proposition. Just stay in touch with people, and you never know how those things are going to work out to your benefit.
Joe, they always seem to circle back around. I think of getting involved in early professional associations or Association of Training and Development. Others that were in our field of study when I had no ability to serve on their advisory boards or their boards of directors, but I would get to meet those people beginning those early networks. They now come back, and I'm now in a better position to be a part of their advisory boards, maybe their board of directors. And it's only because of over 15 years of reaching out to them and building those networks that I have that privilege now. And so beginning early and staying after, meeting the people that you need to meet. Also, interestingly, I think, and this just kind of maybe a little bit ironic, but I've found that networking to the CEOs of competing companies was very useful throughout my career, sometimes just purely from intelligence gathering. But other times, because there are times when you know, your competitor becomes a frenemy, a friend and an enemy. You compete with them, but they're also, in some ways, can be an ally to, you know, espousing an industry cause. And so, it's maybe not often thought of to network with people you might compete with for a job, or in our case, a company you might compete with for business. But I've found that also to be very useful for our development as a company.
Bobby, I found exactly the same thing to be true. When I was on the road, I'd often call a competitor and say, I'm going to be in your neighborhood next week. You mind if I stop by and say hello? Oh, come on, Joe. Come on, we'll have lunch. I'll take you for a walk around the store. And nobody was going to give away competitive secrets, but we sometimes had mutual issues with the suppliers who weren't supplying well, or we had mutual issues in maybe freight issues or things that in which there was not a competitive advantage or disadvantage where it's a mutual problem. And I just found that to be tremendously valuable and has developed some wonderful relationships that exist to this day, even though I've been retired for quite a few years. Another thing I'd like to mention to our audience, Bobby was talking about developing your networking and calling competitors and calling other people. There's no harm and often a benefit. Just call somebody, anybody that you think might be a benefit to you, and say, "Hey, hi, my name is such and such, and I recognize something about you and your organization. I'd like to spend a few minutes with you and learn something about what's going on in your organization." And you'd be amazed how many people would be just thrilled to talk about what they do and would be more than happy to spend time with you. So give it a shot. It works 90% of the time.
Thank you. So if we're talking about networking, that certainly isn't a piece of advice that you would give to a young leader who's moving forward on their leadership path. Are there other things that you would suggest that they do?
Well, this continued professional development. So realizing your weaknesses early and getting help with those early and sooner the better. You know, if you can get a catalog of your strengths and weaknesses and start to work against them in a thoughtful way. And also, having a plan, you have to have some objectives. So a lot of people, it's easy to think you have objectives, but you don't really until you write them down. And so some of our earliest efforts to write a business plan were very informative, because when we were out raising capital, without those milestones and objectives and the types of questions people ask of you when you set goals down in writing, change. And so another piece of advice would be, I met a friend recently, and I've kept track for some time now, who's so creative. He would come up with new ideas that I thought were fantastic at a rate faster than I could absorb them. And my advice to him was to start a catalog, a book of them, because it felt to me like each of them could turn into a business. But if all he ever did was put ideas in front of me, we would never get to an investable idea. And so likewise, I encourage people with goals to write them down and review them every once in a while. What's really cool is, like, my wife does this with our family each year around New Year's. Our four daughters, they have to say a goal, write it down, and put it in the can, and we look at them the next New Year's celebration. But I've found that act of even my children writing down their goals creates quite a moment of reflection a year later, that if you didn't write them down, you just won't hold yourself accountable to them in any way. And so one of my other favorite pieces of advice, which I try to live, is have a business plan, have a goal, have objectives for you and your employees, and write them, put them in front of yourself in paper, in writing.
Exactly. I know one of the things that Joe talks about all the time is taking time to think about that very thing. And Joe, do you want to talk about that for a minute?
No, move on to something else. I just got interrupted by somebody here. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. So, Bobby, what are you most proud of from your leadership journey?
Well, I think so. In some ways, we've been really good, and in some ways, we've been lucky. And when those two things come together, it's great fun. So, a lot of times, you can build a business and work really hard at it, and not get a successful business outcome, either for the business itself or the people in it. And so, what's really fun, at least right now, is that after all this effort, there are many people that have been on the journey with me for a long time that have both had a rewarding journey, but also had a financial benefit, a win that seemed to correlate well. And life isn't always fair, so it doesn't always work that way. You can work really hard and not have a good outcome, but it's exciting to me, and I'm proud that there are many people that have been able to create personal success by going on the journey with me and with our organization. And so it's a lot of fun to celebrate when someone puts 10 years of work in and it becomes rewarding for them in many ways.
Exactly. Here's a reflective question, and I've done this with other groups, so it's not the first time, but I'll ask you, if I gave you three stones and I ask you to identify each one of them as a major event in your professional life, and it can be you personally in your professional life or it can be the company, what would they be?
Well, let's see. I guess I'll do the professional angle. Because I can think of a few events that were impactful and key inflection points for me. The first maybe I brought up earlier was that that speaking event, because what I faced then was like the realization that there were things that I couldn't do, that I had to learn to do if I were going to play the role I wanted to be in. And, you know, kind of a little bit intimidating, but you just had to, like that speaking engagement, I realized I was going to have to do it and continue to do it. And so I had to face that demon and keep working on it. I'm still working on that today. It's not my favorite thing to do, but in about 6 weeks, I'll be in front of 500 or 600 employees and customers here in Nashville at our summit, and I'll have to give a keynote address. So I've got to, you know, suck it up and get ready again and go do it. So, you know, kind of facing your demons, and there was a key inflection point there. Another, if I think back to another kind of inflection point, this goes all the way back to my car wash days, but I remember that I really messed up the paint on a customer's car, and his name was Mr. Ramsey. And it was a $50 service that I provided to clean his car, but I actually hurt his paint because I didn't know enough about paint at that time. That was my first summer. And I kind of rubbed some of it off because it was a highly oxidized car, and I shouldn't have been waxing it to begin with. And so I remember that day I had to go and talk to Mr. Ramsey and explain to him what I had done, and it was my lack of experience that I had to own the problem. And I think kind of facing that I had to tell someone how bad I had messed up and that I had done more damage than good was a key inflection point of learning how to own the customer, own the problem, and tell it like it is, because it could only get worse if you tried to not face it. And so I think that was another keystone for me. And that goes way back to middle college.
Mm-hmm.
And then I maybe think of a few more, but I remember a key point where we were running out of money and I had to go we were trying to raise professional money, venture money. And we had gone to about 16 or 17 different venture capitalists, pitched our business, and I was inexperienced at pitching it. So we were getting a lot of no's. And I finally got a yes from a local venture capitalist here in town, Charlie Martin, after going to Silicon Valley and Boston and New York and getting those. And he was going to back us, and he offered us a term sheet. And so, again, lack of experience, but I almost over-negotiated that deal and lost it. And fortunately, my good senses came to me, and I ended up accepting some of the terms he offered and accepting his capital. Right after his capital came in, a lot of good things started happening for us. GE and Morgan Stanley invested. We raised about $12 million, and a lot of it was attributed to having him in. And I remember thinking of the negotiating where he said, he looked at me and said, Bobby, I'm so old, I'm this old, I've lived my whole life without owning any part of your company. I can easily live the rest of my life without owning any of your company. And it was just a key, a rude awakening that he was very prepared to walk from investing in our company. And I had to look at that and decide to let him invest and accept some of his terms. But I almost blew it. I almost didn't take the capital. And I dare say that we wouldn't be in business today if we hadn't accepted his term sheet.
Wow. Great lessons. Before I ask you the last question, if you are out there in listener land, callers, *7. To ask a question, or if you're online, enter your question in the box and hit submit. So, Joe, do you want to respond to those three things? I know we already talked about presentation skills, but I know how you feel about facing the truth and admitting mistakes and how important that is. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, when you have people working for you and you've screwed up, they know you screwed up too. And the sooner you acknowledge it, the more they believe in you and trust you and respect you. One of my biggest operational screw up was allowing us to adopt a new computer system in a big flash bang overnight change, and it paralyzed the company. And I could have gone and stuck my head in a hole somewhere, but I didn't. I stuck around. I stayed with people. I brought in pizza at night. I encourage people. We celebrated what little successes we have, and we finally dug our way out of a hole. But you know, you could go sit in your office or go somewhere, or you could pitch in and stand next to people and hold their hand, and that's what I did, and that got us, that helped get us through the process, and nobody quit during that period of time, as frustrating as it was, and it lasted for several months.
it does make a huge difference. And typically people already know who's responsible for the mistake anyway. So owning it is just putting it out there for everyone to know that you know, because they already did. So I think it's a really important point. So, Bobby, lastly, what other thoughts about leadership? Anything else that you want to tell us? Any stories that you want to share with us? Anything about what's next, what's in the future, what your plans are in terms of your own development, what you'd like to see happen? Any of that?
Well, Mary, it's a great opportunity to plug the programs you guys offer at the Scarlet Leadership Institute, because we had done our employee survey about 2 years ago. We just fielded another one recently, so hopefully have a difference in this particular category I'm going to mention. But we were, even though we were a learning and development company, we were scoring ourselves very poorly on training and developing our employees, and even maybe promoting from within and developing people up. And I just got out of a meeting a few minutes ago with one of our leaders who said that she runs a department, had 9 employees in it. She hired them all. Had 10. 9 of them got promoted out of the department this year. They were all recruited to other areas of the company. They'd come in and done a year of service. You have to do a year of service in the role you start, and then you get promoted up. And so she was contemplating the fact that she had to hire 10 more, and she told me today she had just successfully backfilled all 10. And so I think this idea of leadership development is one that we're going to have to take more and more seriously at our company as it grows. And we have the good fortune of, after getting those not so stellar reviews from employees about development, we took action and we engaged with your institution and put a program in for continuous learning for our employees, both leaders, which is required participation, and optional participation for what we call aspiring managers. And this rolling curriculum, I think, is having a positive impact. You're helping develop both the curriculum and topics. So, Joe and Mary, I want to say thank you to both of you. The next part of our journey is continuing on to be a learning and development company internally, and your organization is going to be a meaningful part of it, so we appreciate that.
We have a couple of questions online, and thank you, Bobby. I really appreciate that. I can't tell you how much I enjoy working with your group and all of your groups at every level and in every location. We do have a couple of questions. One is, have you read any leadership books recently that you recommend?
Well, not leadership books. I'm in the middle of Unbroken, which is some form of endurance book.
Right.
Quite a challenging book to get through, just from the nature of it. But I haven't read any recent books directly on leadership. But some of the books I'm reading, like the Unbroken, I guess is about survival and leadership.
Exactly. We have another question. What has been the most difficult personal decision that you've had to make?
Difficult personal decision. I don't know. I can relate a lot of them to business, and personal decisions are personal for a reason. I guess they stay that way.
I'm sorry, Bobby. I misread that. It's personnel decision. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's different.
It is different. Yes. You're off the hook now.
Well, it's a similar thing, though, because a lot of times I think those kind of decisions result in changing management structure, people's roles, responsibilities, and communicating those changes and trying to put a reason to them. And so I think we've done a very good job here at trying to match people's skills to roles, which often people enter into a role and maybe it's not quite the right one for them, and then you have to communicate why they're either, you know, they might be better in a different role, which has the implication of they're not doing their current role well, which may be in fact true. And so some of those types of personnel decisions where you have to sit down with someone and try to better match their personal skills with the future of the company and roles they can be in, those are definitely challenging. But you know, if you do it right and you're direct and you kind of say what you're thinking and believe, I think generally you can get a good outcome out of those challenging situations.
I think so, too, and especially, as you said, if you do it correctly and have the right motivation. I'm really trying to help you. I'm not trying to, you know, stall your career. We have another question. I read that Fortune 500 companies have a 70% dropout rate due to inability to change and adapt. How would HealthStream continue to grow, knowing that change may be a part of that growth?
Well, we're in being kind of technology-based, the rate of change in our company and our industry and our competitors is so high, it's just staggering. I was at a lunch yesterday with Kevin O'Hara, who used to work here, is now the CEO of Sias, and he was even talking about the nature of developing enterprise-class applications and how it's shifting. The rate of change is so high in our industry, it creates all kinds of challenges to stay current, and to select the technologies you develop in and your approach to development. And so I think the rate of change is one of the things that makes our environment so challenging. Our company, that's why you have to have a culture where people, they need to be attracted to the company knowing that that is the nature of the business they're coming to. And so clear communication about the business you're in and attracting the right kind of people to it that are comfortable with that kind of change where the business can pivot. The core services need to be modified. The way you approach problems has to change. And I think there's no industry evolving faster than the software development industry and the way applications and products are released. So hopefully the type of people attracted to our company are the type that love that rate of change and just know it's coming. We reorganize at least once a year where we whole departments may shift their focus, roles and titles that once were important are no longer, and those people get repurposed into new roles, and you just shouldn't be in the tech industry if you don't enjoy those kind of challenges. And people in our company have to kind of cut their own path because they have to keep playing to their strengths, find new areas where they can lead. And other industries may not be like that; they may not change as fast. But I think it's a known quantity in the tech industry, the rate of change, and hopefully everyone's comfortable with that kind of environment, which we aspire to have.
It's probably less of an issue in your industry than in some others, but it is definitely an issue. So hiring the right people is exactly the right first tact, I think. This is a great question. Do you still detail your own car?
It's funny because for more than a decade, I did not. And just lately, in order to have a little escape from all this thinking kind of work, I found myself out back with my Meguiar's polish, which is the same brand wax I used 27, 28, 30 years ago, and polishing and waxing my car, which it's really an escape. It's not really the objective isn't to clean the car. It's just to get outside and do something a little different, and I've found myself doing that a little bit lately.
I think that's amazing.
If you need an extra car to practice on, I can bring mine over.
Yeah, but to be sure, it's not a love or a passion, and I've the last 15 years, I haven't done any of that, so car washes work just fine. But a little bit getting back on my game, and it's funny you ask that, because literally in the last several months, it's been something I've been doing a little bit more of.
I love that question. Any other questions out there? *7 if you're on the phone, and type your question and hit the box submit.
Mary, while we're waiting, if I can just back up a few questions here. One of the questions was, what books are you reading? I read a lot, and I've got a suggestion or two. One of the best business books I've read recently was by Rich Karlgaard, K-A-R-L. He's one of the key people at the Forbes magazine. The name of the book was The Soft Edge. And Karlgaard is very involved in what goes on in Silicon Valley. And he spends the book talking about how important the people aspect of the business is and how often businesses focus exclusively on the strategy and the mechanics of getting things done and don't spend enough time on the people. Now, it's obviously Bobby spends a lot of time on the people issue, and but most companies do, and many companies forget to do it, and I think his book is excellent. And then second, if anybody ever buys anything from Amazon or is interested in the retail world at all, the Everything Store about Amazon and Jeff Bezos is a fascinating story about what goes on in the world of Amazon, and you could read into that what's going to go on in the future of Amazon, and it's an interesting book. I don't think that although he's been wildly successful, I don't think he's a good role model for an executive you'd want to work for, but the book is very, very interesting. It's called The Everything Store, because that's what he wants to do, sell everything to everybody.
Wow. Thanks, Joe. Other questions? If not, Joe, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, I really enjoyed the conversation here. I'm sorry I got distracted earlier. It's been very interesting, and I'm after listening to Bobby, he doesn't know it, but I recommended him for something else. I won't tell you what it is right now, but I think you do a wonderful job of running that business, and we enjoyed having you with us on the call today, and thank you all for participating, and don't forget to join us next month on Thursday, April 9th for Mark Cleveland. Thanks again, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bobby, so much.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.